And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. We're on location today at the North Pole. Temperatures outside, about 10 below right now. And wind chills are at 30. I'm sorry. Whoa, I tried to make it warmer than it was. 35 below. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And this is some of the coldest air we've seen this season, and it is dangerously cold. We do have extreme cold warnings in effect for all of our area. So if you are going to be out and about, please make sure to have a winter weather survival kit in your car. Yeah, that car breaks down, you can get frostbite out in this in a matter of about 5 to 10 minutes. So it is a little bit on the dangerous side. Bridget had a good question. She's like, Dean, is that fog? Is that what's going on? If you look to the west of the FM area, there's a little haze, a little fog to the air. And that's a combination of ice crystals. And there is a little bit of fog, but a lot of it, when it gets this cold, the Arctic air basically wrings out any little moisture that's in the atmosphere. And thus, you get these little tiny ice crystals to form. You can't quite call it snow, but you might see a little bit of that blowing around on the pavement. So that's what it is, and it's that cold.
It's very brisk right now.
It is that bitterly cold out. So we're in this for probably, it looks like, about another couple of days. And then after that, we do start to warm things up just a bit. So we're looking at Generally, partly cloudy skies for the rest of the day. Well, we'll top out about 6 below, and most of us between 5 and 10 below, with those northwest winds. A little breezy, 10 to 15. I mean, that's not that windy, but when the temperature is this low, that's going to continue to produce wind chills between 30 and 40 below across the area today. Dangerously cold again tonight, down to about 25 to 30 below tonight, with wind chills between 40 and 50 below. Winds will go lighter out of the northwest at 5 to 10, and then Tuesday, lots of sunshine, northwest winds a little lighter, highs only around 5 below. We're at 0 on Wednesday. The good news is, by the weekend, we're in the 20s and 30s, above 0.
Wait, nice to clarify that for a change,
it's,
right?
It's just been over a 2-week stretch of bitterly cold air around here. We just haven't been able to shake it. I've had a few emails saying, is this it now for the Arctic air this winter? No, but it will be it in terms of long stretches of it, you know. But as I said last week, the LRC predicted, and it's right on target. I said after the 21st, we go into phase 2 of the LRC, and that will warm us up. And sure enough, by the weekend, we're right back up there, and we'll continue with temperatures at or above normal. We'll kind of be that roller coaster ride over the next couple of weeks. We'll see some clippers come through here. We could see one or two of those being on the stronger side. We'll keep a close eye on those, but temperatures will be out of the deep freeze. Now, we could return to that for a couple of days.
Sure.
The Arctic air is not done, but the long stretches of it are. So
absolutely,
that's good news.
We'll see what the next week brings. I know that there's some bull sales next week. I'll be at one, and I'm very glad that when I'm out walking around looking at livestock, it's not going to be this cold out. I appreciate that. So remember, our weather update is sponsored by Ryan Bonesack with Equitable AgriFinance, providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing. He wants to work with you as a local farmer or rancher and make things better in your world. You can certainly give him a call, 701-261-6529. Again, that's Ryan Bonesack, Equitable AgriFinance. I always have to slow down with that one. It takes a little bit. Oh, man. Speaking of slowing down, there's a lot of action in this studio today. We might have to take it a little slow.
It's packed. I don't think we've ever had a full house like this, have we? Maybe once
before. We have, but we came with a lot of props today.
Yeah.
And that's all right. So first of all, we want to introduce our ag assistant today, our assistant ag director, and that is Emma Gullix. Emma, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, so thanks for having me on, Bridget. Yeah, like Bridget said, my name is Emma Gullix. I am a sophomore here in town at NDSU, majoring in crop and weed science with a minor in agribusiness. A little bit about me. I grew up on a family farm and was very involved in 4-H, FFA all throughout high school, along with sports and FCCLA, just about anything there was. Decided to come here to NDSU, and now I'm involved in the Saddle and Sirloin Club, which I have really enjoyed. We actually just had our little international livestock show this last weekend, so staying busy with that, and I always thought, oh, let's come to college and maybe it'll slow down, but no, it doesn't. It just picks up. I thought, you know, life would be a little easier without all those extra stuff, but no, I'm really enjoying it, and so thanks for having me on today, guys.
Oh, it'll be a lot of fun. We've got headlines. We've got more weather to follow. For those of you who are watching on our live stream, which you can do on Facebook as well as YouTube, you can follow us, Weather and Ag in Focus. And you can also follow us on Acres TV. You can see Emma. We've got some pictures of her up. So folks see that you've been livestock judging. I see some hogs in the arena right there. And it's very appropriate that you have your FFA jacket in one of those photos. Want to tell us why it's appropriate this week?
Yeah, so this week is National FFA Week, so we're kicking that off today.
See, we said bring water with, right? There you go,
yeah,
gotcha.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's a picture of me doing livestock judging. That was one of my favorite events through FFA, and I held our couple chapter positions. I was vice president and president, and honestly, FFA with my ag advisor is kind of what got me to go into ag here in college, and so I will forever be thankful for that program and my ag teacher, Sarah Wendt, for that. So,
and Emma, what's the biggest thing, I mean, you still got a ways to go through college. What's the biggest thing FFA has taught you so far?
Oh, you know, networking is a huge thing, and I think FFA was a very huge networking opportunity along with those public speaking components to almost every single contest there is. I mean, from livestock to egg sales to parliamentary procedure, you have numerous opportunities, and anybody and everybody who's in FFA can find something out there for them. And I think the public speaking aspect is a huge, huge role that has played and is going to carry me through my whole life. So that's one of the biggest things I think I've learned.
That's awesome.
Emma mentioned ag sales. Saturday morning, I was invited down to Kindred to help judge the ag sales invitational that they had. There was also crop and livestock judging there for 4-H and FFA. So there was well over 400 kids at Kindred High School voluntarily. On a Saturday morning, I might add.
That's great.
And you're exactly right. When it comes to the public speaking portion of that, we saw kids that presented that are just doing an outstanding job. And they're anywhere from 7th and 8th graders on through high school. They did a wonderful job. They had to sell us Miller Welders. And Miller's a brand of welders. And so it was kind of fun to see what they would pick up in a short amount of time as a team and have to focus on, you know, like one of those pieces of equipment. It's not only a welder, it's an air compressor, it's a generator. There's a reason why you pay $20,000 for it. So they did a really great job of helping us learn more and sell it to us. It was fun.
I thought for a second you said Miller High Life. That's why I gave you that look.
Close enough.
I'm like, what are they doing trying to sell you beer?
No, we had Miller Welders. Oh, man. So that's just one of the things for us to talk about today. We did also have some headlines that we brought up prior to the show, and one that struck our attention had to do with some mystery seeds that are coming out of China. Do you want to recap that just a little bit, Emma?
So yeah, down in Texas, there's been some mystery seed packages showing up unsolicited to people. And so their Commissioner Sid Miller is urging everyone to call in to the Texas Department of Ag to report these packages so they can try to get a handle on this situation with a lot of unknowns in it, obviously. And they're originating from China is where they are coming from. So, he's urging those people to call those in. And a lot of unknowns with this that can be very consequential to the agriculture industry.
Does it say who's distributing these? Does the article have anything on that?
They know they're originating from China. This happened a couple years ago as well, where we saw some of these unusual seed packets just showing up randomly that people hadn't ordered. As someone majoring in crop and weed science, we talked a little bit about this with you, Emma, and what would be some of the reasons why it would be a little frightening to get something like that, not knowing, and then go ahead and plant it.
Yeah, so obviously unknown, that's a huge concern. And like we have seen, some invasive species up here. I mean, specifically in North Dakota, you got water hemp that's coming up, and people thought that wasn't going to be a huge problem, and now it has turned into very detrimental to the egg crop industry for sure. And I know Bridget was saying, like, there's no knowing how invasive they are, what the impacts are to water supply, livestock, wildlife, and of course crops, cropping too. Like, there's so many facets of egg that this can affect.
Well, are they a host plant for something else that we don't know about yet? Can it help? Can it spread disease? Are they toxic to livestock? You know, leafy spurge got here because somebody thought it was a pretty ornamental, and now it is a giant pain in not cropland, but especially our rangeland, our CRP, that type of thing. Haying, if you're doing any haying. So those are reasons why if you see those packets and you don't know what they are, especially this was happening in Texas, but it could be anywhere, make sure you call your Department of Ag. They want to find out about that.
Right.
More to find out today will include our guest who's joining us, and that's Nate Schlieve. Nate's here as well. And we're going to talk about the Grand Forks Farm Toy Show. And you got to look on the live stream today because Nate brought props. That is phenomenal.
I thought it was an actual tractor.
It is a 1460 axial flow combine. Was that the first axial flow, Nate?
Yes, it was the first axial flow in 1977.
That is, and it's a huge box. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought I was doing well bringing, you know, my dad's little drill and tractor. No. He totally beat me by bringing that combine. It looks awesome. So we're going to talk about the toy show and also some things with Farm Bureau.
Sure.
When we return, we're going to catch up with the markets, and we'll do that with Northern Ag Network and be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus, and a full house of fun today as we get to have not only our assistant ag director for the day, and that is Emma Gullix, but we also have Nate Schlieve joining us. Nate is with not only Farm Bureau, but Grand Forks Farm Toy Show and so many more things. Nate, I thought of you driving down the interstate this morning knowing you were coming in, but also, and Addison's got this picture for our live stream, so I was coming down I-29. I just about hopped a ditch and a fence to go take a picture of a John Deere cotton picker parked in a lot right along the interstate. And for those who've never seen one, we'll put that up in our stream for you to look at. It's massive. That's mm-hmm. And as a guy who is very familiar with John Deere equipment, correct me if I'm wrong, it is the largest, the most moving pieces of a piece of equipment built by John Deere, and they're built in Louisiana.
Yep, that is correct. I don't know if they are anymore, but they used to be the item that was the most expensive item to purchase.
So I'm just curious why it was in Fargo, North Dakota.
That is a good question. So
I don't know. There we go. There's the picture of it. There was no header on it. I actually had to Google the number. It's a cotton picker stripper, if you will. It creates the bale right there on the machine. It was massive and very heavy, from what I could tell.
Was it going south or north?
Well, it's sitting on a trailer in a lot.
Okay.
So I don't know which way they're headed, but if there's a new cotton market in Winnipeg, I'm a little surprised.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you didn't stop and ask. Excuse me, where are you going with this?
Well, the truck wasn't running. I didn't see a driver.
Okay.
So otherwise, that's how I got on the nitty-gritty dirt band tour bus once, and we'll talk about that on a Friday. Nate, you brought a bigger, better toy than I did today. Talk about your combine.
So this is a 1460 International Harvester combine. They call it the Prestige Select Series. So basically, they have more details than a normal shelf model. It's about a $550 toy.
Wow.
So it's not every kid isn't going to have one in their sandbox to go play with. but it was pretty neat. They've come out with a couple of them. They're now introducing a John Deere model that's similar to it as well. So obviously, this is for collectors that want to invest. It's not a small item to store or display, but very well detailed, very well done. So it was one of them out of my collection that I actually have resold, so I brought it with me down here. And so, but that's, it was released about a year ago, and you had to get on a waiting list to get it. It took us about a year to get it, so.
All right, as a guy who, like you said, it was in your collection, how far back does your collection go in order to be starting a toy show in Grand Forks?
So if you go back and look at pictures on my first Christmas, I got a 915 International Harvester Combine in a box. So that's where it started.
Okay.
So, and my parents, you know, this is in the late 70s, early 80s, and as you know, the farming economy wasn't fantastic. So any item like that we got, my dad actually built me a barn because plywood he could afford.
Right.
Yeah. So we had a lot of that. He actually welded up a couple toys for me that I still have, which are the most precious toys I have because he built them for me.
Yeah.
But that kind of started the collection. My cousins were into it. Their dad built them a machine shed. We'd get together and play, and it's just a lot of great memories about that. And as time went on, The collecting, if you go back to the history, the Toy Farmer magazine, which was officially started in 1978, I believe.
Out of Lemoore, North Dakota.
You got it. Yep. It was a very much a closet collector's hobby. It was guys that would get together and literally on a dirt road or a gravel road intersection and open the trunk of their cars and swap toys. That's how it started. So
even the Big Bang Theory they played in public they played Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the secrets going on in the countryside back at the time. But they started the magazine. They saw there was a need for it. Actually, there was another toy magazine started in Manville, North Dakota.
Really?
And I have some copies of it. It was black and white. Some people that are at our show, it was their dad that wrote the magazine. So it's really cool when you look back at that history and how it started. And then little towns started to gather toy shows. Oslo, Minnesota had one. There were several of them around, but due to declining population, less farmers that are out there, it just slowed down, I believe, and went to larger shows. So now in North Dakota, there's a show in Minot. There's the one in Lemoore. There's one in Langdon that was just this past weekend. There's now one in Botno. And then the one that we have in Grand Forks would be the main shows. Minnesota has a few more. Actually, in March, they have a number of them coming up, too, so regionally. But the idea behind it came was we went to Dyersville, Iowa. I just looked today to see the history, and back in 2016 is when we started. My kids took a 4x8 sheet of plywood and put all their farm toys and stuff. And when you go to Dyersville, that's the national farm toy show. You can compete.
So this is literally, we're putting sheets of plywood out. We are building what my kids' grade school teacher would call the diorama.
Yep.
Of live action farming.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
So you put your barns, put your cows, put your tractors on there, whatever you want. And there's youth competitions and adult competitions. So my kids were interested in that. We took them down to Dyersville. I'll never forget the first year we came back. My son could care less if he got a trophy, but he got on YouTube. And he thought that was the best thing ever. So he made it on YouTube. And so, so we competed 4 years, I guess, between my two sons. We're going to go back this November and compete again. But the amount of talent, there are people that come from Europe and compete in this competition.
Okay.
Lots of level of talent, lots of, different stages of farming. There's a gentleman that does a lot of potato displays and sets up. So it's in cotton.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw any of the pictures, but this last week was the National Farm Machinery Show.
It was in Louisville.
And there was a huge display set up there, and part of it was a pulling track where they had tractor pulling going on.
I saw that. Yes.
So the industry, I think, is growing. Even the little town of Langdon, North Dakota, last weekend had the most number of vendors that they've ever had.
Wow.
And I walked in on Sunday and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of people here. So it was awesome.
It is a great collection, and it's not just kids, like you said.
Yeah.
It starts likely with the adults.
Yeah.
When you think about the show that you're going to do in Grand Forks, would you say your square footage size is similar to what they were doing in Langdon, and you're going to pack it full of vendors as well?
The square footage would be larger.
Okay.
I will say in Langdon they had approximately 40 to 50 tables.
Okay.
We'll have enough square footage to do 140 tables.
Whew.
So, yeah, we'll have 15,000 square feet this year.
That's
so
outstanding.
If you're familiar with the Alaris Center, there's 5 ballrooms. We're going to be in ballrooms 1 through 4 this year. So, yeah. We started out 4 years ago. We were hoping for 50 tables. We got around 60. The last 2 years, we've been right around 100 or a little better. And this year, we're booked at like 128 as of yesterday.
All right. We have lots of questions about the when, the where, and how much. We're going to do that after bottom of the hour news. So we'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. You know, this is a day you're going to want to be following along on the live stream, not just because we have a full house of great people. We've got Emma Gullicks with us. She's our assistant ag director, intern for the day. We've got Dean Wysocki with weather, our chief meteorologist. We've got Nate Schlieve with, who is here to talk about the Grand Forks Farm Toy Show. But also, we have so many great things to show, and one of them, I didn't bring it in, but I wanted to show Nate. I have a custom-built Wishick disc that was part of their limited edition. So Addison's going to roll that video on our live stream. And it's, Dean, we were talking on off air, and Dean said, you know, what do some of these machines go for as far as expense? And they're expensive because they are so detailed. You know, that disc I've got, wow. You can see I've got a hitch pin for it. I've got the drop down jack to hold it up. I've got hydraulic hoses on it. It's impressive.
And Nate, we were talking off air. What's the most expensive piece of toy equipment you've seen sell? What's the highest?
Sure. So in person, I saw a 9600 John Deere combine that a gentleman built by hand. It had rubber belting on it. It had pulleys, cab detail in it, and all the shields opened up. 1/16 scale. So this scale, that brought like $13,000 on the auction.
Amazing.
Yep.
All homemade.
Yeah. And there are.
How long did it take him to make it, you know?
I couldn't answer how many hours he had into that. Okay. But every year for a while, obviously he has a name and people collect his items, which are limited because he only can make so many of them. But he would produce them and they were just extreme detail. So very, very few pieces out there, but very intricate.
Wow.
So,
amazing.
All right, Emma, you've been patiently waiting. What do you want to ask today?
So, Nate, I know you talked about how you have like 150 vendors in there. Is there like a rhyme or reason to like, oh, this vendor has this, this vendor has this, or is it like anything from any scale that anyone can bring in?
Sure.
What's that look like there?
One of the things that we try to do at our show is have some variety. The vendor, as long as it's farm-related items, that's what we look for.
Okay.
So most of the vendors would be, so to back up, it's about 128 tables, and that probably comprises of, we'll say 30 to 35 vendors. So a vendor could have multiple tables depending on how big of a space they want to rent from us.
Okay. Gotcha.
A lot of it will be individuals that have toys. Some of them, like what Bridget has over there, would be older original toys. They might specialize in that. A few of them have all the latest stuff, and they just specialize in that. Some are a mix between. We do also have some people with some variety. There's a company in Minnesota that makes steel signs that say Case or John Deere. They're set up, and that's all they do is they sell signs and signage that people hang up in their houses and things like that. So we like that variety. I have a gal from Oslo that comes down and she milks goats and she makes lotions and soaps and she sells her products there.
Oh, really? Okay.
So we want some variety. A couple gals have dolls there. Their husbands have trucks or tractors, but they bring them in. So if there's a little girl that walks in, I want her to be able to have some things besides tractors. She might be interested. Last weekend, we took two little girls to this toy show in Langdon and they went right over to the dolls and, you know, I mean, that was great. And we asked them afterwards, did you enjoy the show? They did. We try to keep it so it's a variety of different things. One new thing we're going to do this year, and Bridget seen it last year, we were out together on a farm visit and they had a bunch of corn set up inside and kids could play in it. We're going to have an area where kids, we're going to bring in toys that they can play with.
So like a sandbox.
Exactly. And it's all going to be kernels of corn that they can go out and it'll be flagged off. So like any kid that comes to something, half an hour into it, they're tugging on mom and dad. I'm bored. I'm tired. I want to go home. So now they can go in that area and blow off some steam. Mom and dad can sit down, you know, take a break. So we try to do some things like that to engage and make it worthwhile. We've got a few people that have RC remote control items. We're going to have an area where they can drive around and cruise around and show off what they have too.
Ooh, wow. So a lot of different things. I know Bridget had also mentioned before the show that there's interest in 3D printing items. Yep. Can you talk a little bit?
Sure.
A little bit about that?
Sure. We always have a couple folks that bring 3D printed items that they're printing either for sale. Some of them just want to demonstrate what they're doing with the 3D printer. And I just had a young gentleman from Wolford, North Dakota, that just asked if he could come with his 3D printed items. A lot of them are grain bins, fences for cattle. It's the things that the major companies aren't necessarily making, and they're more region specific.
Okay.
Like we'll see bins here in North Dakota that you may not see in Iowa, for instance, and they'll make those because they're specific to what people have on their farm here.
Yep.
So a lot of 3D printing interest. That's been huge in the industry the last couple of years. We walked in, the last time I was in Dyersville, we walked into a store and he had 40 3D printers running 24/7.
40.
Wow.
40. And he was making what Bridget showed, that Wishig disc, very similar to that.
Okay.
He was making discs and tillage equipment, but he had them running 24/7.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, so the neat part about this industry, it's changed a lot. When I was a kid, you'd go into an implement dealer, they'd have half a dozen different toys that you could pick from.
Yeah.
Okay. And now with the growth of it and the creativity and the ingenuity, people are building a lot of their own. It used to be if you were really good with brass and solder and things like that or welding, you could make some toys, but it was it took a lot of time, labor intensive. You weren't going to mass produce them. A 3D printer, you can mass produce, right? So
now that we have everybody all jacked up to attend, when is the show and the details like that?
Sure. So the show is actually March 28th and 29th. We do a Friday, Saturday show. The reason we do it Friday, Saturday is we feel like there's a number of people. We open at noon and we go till 7 on Friday, and we feel there's a number of people that they might be getting out of town for the weekend. It's March. We've got basketball. You've got hockey. You've got all the things going on. If they want to get there and then get out of town, go to Minot, Bismarck, Minneapolis, wherever have you, they can still come to the show, spend the time, and then carry on with the weekend. And then Saturday we run from 9 to 5. So noon to 7 on Friday, the 28th, and Saturday from 9 to 5 at the Alaris Center in Grand Forks. 12 and under is free to get in. Above 12, it's $6 to get in. Parking is free. So you can come to the Alaris. Like I said, we're in Ballrooms 1 through 4, right in the middle of the building, easy to find. We also visit Greater Grand Forks. The Visitors Bureau also provides us signs and things, so it's easy to find. That's when we hold it, and knock on wood, the weather holds and we're good to go. That's always the concern. 1 year we had it where we got snow the second day, but we still had a great first day of the show.
So,
I know, weather. Right? That's part of the stormy part of the LRC cycle towards the end of the month. Yeah. Let's hope we can hold it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ground drifting. That's it.
Yeah. But to answer your question, as far as finding out more information about it, we do have a Facebook page. So if you go look up Grand Forks Farm Toy Show and share our page, we're about ready to get, we have giveaways every week starting here soon. So some tractors we're going to be giving away, some merchandise and clothing that we do. The gal that does milks the goats with all of her lotions and products, she has a basket that she gives away. So lots of neat things like that. So go check it out. All we ask is that you like and share the page to your own, and that's how you get registered.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not just about toys we want to talk about today.
You know,
there's a whole connection here with FFA and American Farm Bureau, and what is that?
Okay. Well, it was very fortunate that I came in today and you were talking about FFA, because you think about leadership and you think about where our students are can go with this. And I know for me, after FFA, it's like, what do you do next? What's the next thing you can connect? You mentioned you're going to NDSU. There is the opportunity in college to get involved in a collegiate Farm Bureau, if you want to. And the thing that I got involved in, my wife got involved in as young people coming into the farming industry, it was an opportunity to, number one, network with people. So when you get out of college, you meet all these great friends, you go on, you get out of college, and now you start and you're like, how do I handle this situation? Or mom and dad are telling me this, but I don't know, should I have more ownership in it or not? Depending upon, you know, what you end up doing. And Farm Bureau for us gave us an opportunity through the Young Farmers and Ranchers program to continue on the leadership journey. There's a discussion meet where you can compete and you can have a discussion with 8 other people about a topic. And it really teaches you about how, when you get in the public and somebody has a difference of opinion, how do you handle that difference of opinion and talk positively about agriculture? That's one of the main things a discussion meet. So we started that. My wife and I started that in Minnesota when we lived over in Minnesota. Moved to North Dakota in 2011. I continue to stay involved in Farm Bureau. The next step for me was what's called promotion education. And that's another committee that you can be involved in. And what that focuses on is how do we promote agriculture. We know that, you know, we're 3 generations removed from the farm for the most part. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. We were talking off air a little bit about SNS at NDSU and the fact that now some of the sororities and fraternities are involved in a LAM lead, right? Yep. So we're bringing those students in that go to NDSU, but maybe have no tie to agriculture, but getting them to understand why agriculture is important. So Farm Bureau, that's a lot of it for me, is trying to get the word out there. 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to apply to be on the American Farm Bureau Promotion Education Committee. And so I represent North Dakota. There are 12 of us now on the committee, and basically from different states. And we our purpose and mission is to think about opportunities and ways that we can promote agriculture. So one of the main projects we've been working on is called Ask a Farmer. Mm-hmm. And what we did in Idaho last June is that we took all of us and we went to a grocery store. We had it lined up ahead of time. And somebody that raised beef was in the meat aisle. Somebody that raised eggs was, or chickens was in the egg aisle. Somebody that raised flowers and had a nursery in New York stood by the flowers. And we just had a pull-up banner. It said, I'm a farmer. Let's talk. And we just wanted organic conversations to get started. The gentleman that ran the grocery store was just thought it was phenomenal. Outside, we brought in some combines. We brought in some live animals. We had all that so they could go outside and see all the things through that the local Farm Bureau brought in. And then we stood inside and did that. The other thing that we've done is we went to culinary institutes. And we've made connections with those kids because they want to serve food, they want to prepare food, but do they really know where the food comes from? Mm-hmm. And we did it in Chicago, downtown Chicago, last November. Ask us questions. And it's amazing to think, we go there prepared with some thoughts in our mind, what we might answer. That's usually not the questions that they have.
So, wait. What did they ask you?
Sometimes, you know, you think that it's going to be a lot about GMOs and things like that. Huh? It's not so much. It was more about how are you saving chemicals? Like they're thinking like, what are you doing to save chemicals? And asking that question,
what's
like,
that
how
process?
Do you do it? How do you do it if your neighbor's organic and you're not organic? Okay. What do you do to protect them and protect yourself? And I'm like, wow, this is great, you know? So we talked a little bit, from my aspect, one of the new technologies is called See and Spray. Mm-hmm. So there's cameras on the sprayer boom. It sees, identifies a weed, and determines if it needs to turn a nozzle on or not. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to save chemical costs. So we talked about that. We talked about the fact that we're all neighbors, and if somebody is organic, we respect them. We don't spray at times of the day where there might be drift, chemical drift might drift, and what can we do? So we're trying to support one another. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of the type of questions that we had.
That's interesting because, I mean, growing up in a rural community, it's like everyone knows ag, and coming to college has really made me realize like how many people are, you know, disconnected from it, like they don't know. And I think that's great that that there's programs out there that are bringing ag to these people and like giving them knowledge on it and allowing them to ask questions like in a good environment where they don't feel like pressured because they don't know. So I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been very eye-opening to me to go and listen to people from other states and listen to the concerns and issues that they've run into. And that's all information I can take back to North Dakota. And right. Figure out different avenues that I can get to people that I would have never thought about before.
Absolutely.
You know, the idea of going to a culinary institute and visiting with these students, I would have never thought about that. There's a connection. You know, when that person graduates and now they're in New York City and they're in maybe a high-end restaurant, somebody asks them about beef and they're like, yeah, I can tell you a little bit about a beef cow and where it comes from. And I mean, I would never be in that restaurant being able to tell that to that consumer. Right? So other ways that we can extend out like that.
And be ambassadors for it. That's tremendous.
Yeah.
Okay. As we wrap up, Nate, let us hear once again how folks can get in touch with you about the farm show, dates, et cetera, if you would.
Sure. So I have a partner. I should say we have a partner. So there's three of us, my wife and I and Mike Ratty. Mike Ratty is a retired gentleman that was a combine tech in Grand Forks, and he is our main contact. So his phone number is 218-791-5818. So you can reach out to Mike Ratty. If you're interested in knowing more about the show, if you're interested in being a vendor at the show, reach out to him and he'll get you the information that you need. Otherwise, go to our Facebook page, check that out, ask to join and we'll invite you in. You can connect with us there as well. So there's a couple ways you could do it.
Well, the next time you're doing an Ask the Farmer, and if you are going to be in grocery stores and areas, let us know. Because as we live stream in so many places, we have folks all over the nation and North America that would probably have an interest in knowing where you might be.
Sure. Absolutely.
That'd be great.
We would love to do that.
Folks, there's a lot going on here. We're not done yet because, it's a little breezy outside. So Dean's going to wrap up the weather, and especially what's that deal with that ice crystals? It looks foggy. So stay tuned.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus, 1:54 in the afternoon, and temperatures 79 degrees outside. Oh, wait, there's no
you
7
fall
in front
and
of
hit
that.
Your head?
Yeah, it's 9 below with the north wind blowing about 12, and wind chill is about 30 below out there. So, again, extreme cold warning in effect through tonight and into tomorrow. Dangerous wind chills if you're going to be out and about. But the good news in the forecast is by the weekend, we're back in the 20s and 30s above zero. So hang in there. It's going to be a cold week, but things do improve quite a bit as we head into the upcoming weekend. I think we can all agree on that, that finally. Yeah,
I just tried to start my pickup from here, and it basically just said, what are you kidding me? What's wrong with you?
It's a little cold, but there's also a little bit of a – it looks like fog. If you look off to the west and northwest – there's a little bit of what appears to be fog. It's a little bit of ice crystals and haze in the air. But when it gets this cold, Mother Nature basically wants to squeeze every little amount of moisture out of the air. And you get, instead of snowflakes forming, you get these just tiny little ice crystals. It happens when it's, again, when you're well below zero, this is, you know, this kind of
like
happens.
Those days when we have a hoarfrost, and then that frost is blowing off the trees.
Right.
Because it looks like that's what's hanging in the air.
Again, and we've got about another 24 to 48 hours of the extreme cold before things do moderate. And again, according to the LRC, after the 21st, which is Friday, that's when we go into a more of a northwest flow. And what that gives us is, instead of a direct flow coming out of the north, it moderates a little bit, and we'll get these warm-ups, cool-downs, as these clipper systems move by. Now, as they move by, we typically warm up ahead of them and cool down behind them, but we won't see these long stretches of what we've had almost 2.5 weeks before this is said and done. 2.5 weeks of straight cold Arctic air. That will not be the case from the 22nd through, give it about 2.5, maybe as much as 3 weeks of this northwest flow. And we could see a couple of strong clipper systems come through the northern and central plains with this as well. So we're not done with the snow. I think we're going to get into the stormier, more snowier part of the season here as we go into March, which isn't unheard of. March and April, that's usually when we get our bigger storms around here. And I think that's going to be the case this year again.
We will likely see that. So not going to be a terrible surprise. As we go through this week, though, things that we don't want to surprise you about, because there's always something to celebrate. First of all, coming up in March will be National Ag Week and National Ag Day. That'll be March 18th. So we'll be starting to do some planning about that. This week, though, is National FFA Week. So, Emma, as you think about it, there are some specific days to celebrate this week. Any of them come to mind?
Yeah, so just starting with today, on Monday is their day of service. So chapters are getting out there helping other charities, other people in need, and that's always a huge part of FFA is their community service and their connection with their communities. Rolling into this week, we have Alumni Day on Tuesday, Advisor Appreciation Day on Wednesday, which all those FFA members out there, make sure you thank your advisors. They put in so much work, and like they help you become who you are. I mean, at least mine did anyway, and so make sure to thank your advisors out there. Thursday goes into the Give FFA Day, and they also sponsor with Culver's. So Thursday, February 20th, a portion of their proceeds goes to support those the future of agriculture is what they say with FFA. So another day there on Thursday. And then Friday wraps up the week with the Wear Blue Day, just to support FFA and show your pride for it, pretty much. So
I didn't bring it in, but I do know when I get to the International Crop Expo this week, I'm FFA jacket in the pickup. I'll take that with, because why not be exactly. An alumni? Yep. Nate, you're an alumni too?
Yes.
Which chapter?
Well, back when I lived in Minnesota, what about in Minnewaska?
Ah, nice.
Was Minnewaska Area High School.
Okay. So, see, yep. There's, and I don't want to discount 4-H. I just wasn't a 4-H member, so I don't know as much, but I think as you were a 4-H member.
I was a 4-H member, yes.
Worth your time.
Yes, it is for sure. And another big opportunity there with everything that I went into too. So
great. Well, Nate, Emma, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
It's been awesome. And for Bridget, myself, and for everybody else, I want to thank everybody. Don't go anywhere. Stay warm. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.